Well, Frank Borman, it's been about a year since we talked about the upcoming Gemini program, and Jim Lovell, welcome to the Voice of America here. Frank, as we record this a few days ahead of the Gemini 7 flight, you're preparing many, many last-minute things in your flight plan and in your review of all of your equipment. Would you tell us the thing that impresses you most about going into space for 14 days? What are your thoughts about this long-duration flight?
Well, I guess the happiest moment will be when we finally get started, but we feel that the most serious problem we'll have is the problem of stowage. As you know, the GT-4 had a serious stowage problem when they were not able to open the hatch the second time and discard some of the things they'd planned to, and 5 came back with a lot of stowage problems. And so this has been the one area that we've really worked on in great detail since we've been preparing for this flight.
Well, now you sound just like a space pilot and an engineer giving me that answer. I really meant your own personal feelings about things personal and the great adventure, you know?
Well, we're so involved in the completing the mission successfully that I think our personal thoughts and our personal feelings become the feelings of what are we going to have to do to make sure the mission is a success. And really, right now, the one thing that concerns me the most is the fact that we may have overlooked something. And of course, we don't feel we have, but if we don't go the 14 days, if through some oversightedness or some lack of preparation, we've goofed, well, this is the thing that that we all would hate to see.
Really, the flight becomes a total thing in your life just for that period of time, doesn't it?
That's correct.
Jim, would you reflect on that? How are your feelings about the upcoming mission?
Well, I agree with Frank that my feelings are towards a successful mission and hoping that there are no items that we've forgotten about or that will fail that will prevent us from going the full 14 days. I'm looking forward to it as an adventure also, personally. I think it will be a great adventure, and I'm looking forward to the trip.
Well, let's ask a couple of personal questions of both of you about what gets you into the field of being an astronaut, something that pilots around the world, space enthusiasts who fly with you, in spirit anyway, what gets a person interested in this sort of thing from the time you're a little boy, maybe in like the looks of a plane going overhead? What's the case with you, Jim?
Well, I believe in the time that we live in, it's been a transition for people who are very much interested in flying and have looked at airplanes for years and then have gone into the test flying field. And actually, this is more or less an extension of test flying work that all of us have been involved in. I suspect in the future, though, that youngsters will grow up wanting to go right into the space program from the beginning, and perhaps there'll be some day when airplanes will be bypassed entirely and we'll go right into rocket ships.
Well, now, the three of us were children at the time that we were reading about space flights in comic strips in the funny papers, weren't we?
I'm not that old. I've heard people talk about Buck Rogers, but I recall reading it.
You really don't?
No.
He was
okay.
Pretty accurate, you know, Buck Rogers.
Now, I happen to remember a conversation with Frank about that very subject, this man called Buck Rogers.
That's right. Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, and perhaps even more incisive was Jules Verne,
Jules Verne.
Jim has got a real line on him. Didn't you say he was launched from Florida and everything else?
Well, that's right. His book, From the Earth to the Moon, where he used a large cannon that he sunk into the ground, was launched somewhere near Tampa, Florida.
Somewhere near Tampa, Florida.
There's a lot of similarity between his writings and Buck Rogers. Things that we thought were way out of this world then are more or less into this world realistically now.
Well, now, Jules Verne is an author known around the world, and I'm sure that most of our listeners would know all about his wonderful stories, clairvoyant stories in a way, looking back on it today.
That's
wouldn't you
correct.
Say? Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, we might emphasize to those listening overseas, were two characters in what we call the funny papers or the comic strips. Very popular when most of us, I reiterate, were kids about 20 years ago. And they certainly got me interested in this idea of life on other planets and the possibility of flying out into space. And I think Frank agreed with me really about a year ago here.
That may be. I've always been sort of a little Orphan Annie fan myself.
Okay.
2 weeks.
With us as we're recording this interview, backup pilots Edward White and Michael Collins, and we may hear some comments from the sidelines as we're recording this here a few days before the flight of Gemini 7. Turning to serious matters, as this recorded interview goes on the air, you're going to be in space, gentlemen. Now, what will you be doing during the first few hours, first several days, would you just before this hoped-for rendezvous with Gemini 6? Frank and Jim?
Well, we initially will stay with our booster, the rocket that got us into the orbit. We'll stay with it for about 25 minutes. Then we'll separate from it and keep it in sight. They've placed lights on the booster for us so that we'll be able to see it in the darkness, and we'll take readings, infrared readings on it as we leave the booster behind.
Now this is just staying along with the booster rocket that put you there. Now
that's
this
correct.
Isn't called a rendezvous, this is called station keeping.
That's correct.
Isn't it? Now we wanted to explain that to our listeners too.
Okay, and then after we finally leave the booster and propel ourselves into the orbit that we'll use until GT6 is sure of going, we'll perform many of the 19 experiments that we have on board.
Now, you really have a complement of experiments this time, and I know you're going to be busy for 14 days. You're not going to be worrying about what to do, are you?
I hope not.
It doesn't appear that way, that we'll have plenty of experiments, medical and otherwise, that will keep us busy.
All right, you touched on the thing I thought we should emphasize also, and that is the most important aspect of your particular flight, and that is the medical aspect. Now, I believe I could safely say that you will be monitored more closely during this period of time than any other human beings alive. How does it feel to be that sort of patient and volunteer for this great program?
Well, quite frankly, at times it gets a little annoying. And I think that both Jim and I would feel better if we knew that our backup crew that's been through all this training together with us
could share
this on the ground. I think that we really should have a backup, you know, a sort of a control so that the people on the ground could see, really, if there is anything to this zero-G experiment.
Well, perhaps we ought to make that suggestion, Frank.
Who could we mention it to?
Well, I imagine all the people in the world would be interested.
Ed White says he thinks that would wake him up.
Now, really, at times, the operational constraints imposed by the medical experiments become a little trying. But fortunately, all the doctors have been, I think, very cooperative, and they've been able to change some of their procedures slightly so that we can still operate in some semblance of an efficient manner. And we do hope that the information we bring back will be very valuable.
Well, now, would you briefly review, one of you, for our audience again? Dr. Berry has mentioned this, and I think we broadcast that once before. Would you go through briefly the overall medical evaluation, one of you, please?
Why don't you?
The type of sensors, just the different aspects of measuring your condition, which will be monitored.
All right. I'll make an attempt here. There's quite a few medical experiments and sensors and monitoring. Essentially, of course, we'll have the same sensors that previous flight crews have used for general physical monitoring. We'll have EKG leads, sensors on our body.
For the heart.
That's right, to measure a heartbeat and note the wave, the heart, the electro, what do they call it, the heartbeat wave, whatever it is.
The doctors will be watching.
The doctors will be watching. We'll also have a phonocardiogram to measure the beat itself, which they appear to be fairly important. We'll have an oral temperature probe, which we'll put in our mouth prior to coming up on a station, which they can then read out our temperature. We'll also have a blood pressure cuff, which we can pump up and utilize to measure blood pressure going down to the ground. Frank will have a very interesting and exciting experiment, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm interested in this one, too.
It's something new, and I pushed it quite vigorously because I thought that we really need a good handle on this. It's called the electroencephalogram, EEG. And both Frank and Ed White, the prime or the command pilots, will be wearing this. And it's essentially a case where you have to shave the head in four spots and put the little sensors on top of the head. And they can measure something from this, mostly during sleep cycles, to find out exactly what goes on. And
inside a man's head.
That's right. And I've always been interested in what does go on inside Frank's head for some time, and I feel that this is an important experiment.
It is a very important experiment.
Frank doesn't seem to share the enthusiasm that I do for it, because I don't have to wear it.
But Dr. Berry did explain in all seriousness that this is to measure the depth of sleep, how deep you will go to sleep during your sleep cycles in this environment. And we hope that you come through with flying colors, Frank.
Thank you.
Let's see, what else?
Well, of course, there's an important experiment aboard called calcium balance study. And this is merely one of measuring the intake and the output of all food and waste products, which will be mainly, on our part, just keeping the waste products aboard for post-flight analysis. And we do quite a bit of pre-flight work and post-flight work on baseline data on our calcium balance.
This calcium problem is one of the things to be watched most closely, isn't it, Frank?
I think this is correct, that the calcium balance study is, we're doing it in clinical terms, really, because we're being very carefully monitored pre-flight, during the flight, and post-flight. And I hope that this will give the people, of the doctors, a very good insight as to just what effect the space flight has on a human being.
Really, it just occurred to me, you two fellows are going to go through 5 weeks, approximately, of extensive medical monitoring, aren't you? About a week before you go up, 2 weeks in flight, and then about 2 weeks after return.
That's right. And then if there are any significant anomalies, we'll report back a month later and go through another week of it.
Well, this...
I didn't hear about that one, Frank.
Well, this
Neither
point...
Neither did I. Dr. Berry just mentioned it today.
Well, this points to the statement I made a little earlier that this will probably be a case in which no two human beings have ever been watched so closely, their physical condition and their ability to go into this environment and return. So I'm sure medical science is going to learn a lot from you two fellows. Maybe that's where you'll make your mark in history, you know?
We'll probably get grounded because they'll find out something they would never have found if they didn't look so closely.
Like something else going on in your head?
That's right.
Well, good luck, Frank Borman and Jim Lovell, on the flight of Gemini 7, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here on the ground after that safe reentry.
All right. Thank you very much.
Brad, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks a lot. Okay, 13.
Hey, I sure got a bad audience.